So please welcome Christopher.
For you last, I'm going to tell you one story with two moments of freedom. It's the first time I ever got my car, the first car that I ever had. I didn't get my license until I was 26, until I turned 26, which was about 3 months ago. But the first car I ever had, I was about 23, 24. This is when I was living in Seattle. For about 6 months, I drove this car around, no registration, no license, no insurance. Driving this car around the city, I was trying to get my act together, right? Trying to get my license, always failed the test. Couldn't seem to pass it. Anyway, so, I decided, you know what, I'm gonna get a car. I'm gonna teach myself to drive, I'm gonna drive around. Right, so I get it. I get this 1977 Mercedes, thinking, "Wow, this is a cool car." Yeah, I found it on Craigslist. A guy said it was biodiesel ready. I thought, "Cool, cool. Don't have to rely on oil. Nice, nice." All right. So I start driving around, and at first it's all right. At first it's running good. You know, I'm feeling free. I'm driving all around the city, to and from work. I'm driving outside of the city, going on hikes. It's really nice. After a couple months go by, I'm starting to lose power in my engine. I'm not going up hills. Something's wrong, right? Start noticing this gunk that's in my my fuel filter, right? Didn't know what the problem was, so I start going through it, and eventually I pull out the whole fuel filter, or the fuel tank, of this car. This, mind you, this is my first time ever having a car, ever learning anything with a car. Pull the whole fuel tank out, and I start moving it around. This big fuel tank, sloshing it back and forth, and it sounds like there's a wet rag hitting on the inside. What is that? Right? What could this be? I'm trying to get it out, and eventually I get a coat hanger, and I put the coat hanger in there, and I start pulling out piles of gunk. Turns out, unbeknownst to me, biodiesel cars are very susceptible to algae. So I had all this algae in this car that I paid $5,000 for. Thinking to myself, oh my God, what kind of a mess am I in? So I go through the whole process, get a new fuel tank, trying to do all this stuff for it. By the time, about 5 months into it, all this gunk had started running through the fuel cylinders. The engine was just shot, Car was done, nothing I could do. Take to the mechanic, they say, it's gonna cost you at least $1,600. I can't afford that, right? Thinking, what am I gonna do? Sort of in a transient mode at that time in my life, was living at friends' houses, and these friends of mine were living on a boat right on the river in Seattle. And I think, hey, you guys, you got a good parking lot there. You think I could leave my car here while I try to get the money to fix it? They say, okay. So I put it there. 3 months goes by. Mind you, this isn't like a private parking lot. You know what I mean? This is like a residential area, business neighborhood. My car can't be there. And on top of that, it's leaking oil all over the place. Oh my God, man. What am I going to do? I can't do nothing, right? So I got this car just sitting around, looking at me, just telling me, hey, remember all the fun we had? Remember how free you were? Now this huge burden. Oh my God. All that freedom's gone. Now I'm just stuck dealing with this thing, right? There's some other aspects to it, why I got the car, this girl that I was with, she wanted me to get a vehicle so we can move around, and that relationship dissipates, and now I have this car that's almost a reminder of this broken relationship. Oh God. And so I'm in school at the time, right? And we go on an assignment to the Seattle Art Museum, and we look for things that are sort of metaphorical, that are standalone, but make you think of something else. And so we go up the stairs, and I see in one of the main lobbies a 1977 tan Mercedes that was actually built as a coffin. And I'm thinking, I see that, and I'm just, it hits me. There's my project right there. I can write a report on that. This car is just a coffin of my relationship, my life at the time. Oh God, I'm stuck. And then on top of that, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck with it. And on top of that, it's still sitting at my friend's, parking lot. Jesus, right? So I figure I got to do something with it. I can't leave this thing here. Somebody had taken a bunch of towels and threw it underneath the car because it was leaking oil. And they had taken a Sharpie and written on the back, "This is a leaking car. Get rid of it." Oh, shit. Okay, so I take the car, right? The mechanics wasn't that far away. This is in the industrial district of Seattle, if you guys have ever been there, Soto. So I think, okay, I'm just gonna take it, I'm gonna drive it to the mechanics, right? Just take it to the mechanics, have them just deal with it, maybe I can sell it to them, recoup some money, whatever. So I drive it about a block, it dies. It's dead, right? It's not going anywhere. I think, crap. I used to call it my pony, too. At first I thought it was a joke, because I used to have to ride it like it was a pony, give it some gas, kind of like oomph it, like, come on, get going, and eventually start going along. But at this point, pony's dead. Now I'm beating a dead horse, okay? And so I'm driving through the industrial district. You know, semi is going past me. I'm going maybe 15 if I'm lucky, you know? 10 to 15 miles an hour, semi's going past, going 25, 30, whatever, you know? And I'm just trying to get this car going. And eventually, it's done, right? I park it underneath these bridges, this, like, really sketchy spot. But I'm thinking, okay, this is a sketchy spot, sketchy car, perfect. So I park it there for a couple of days, thinking, okay, what am I gonna do? Nothing I can do. It's like, okay. So I go back to the car after, again, a couple of days. And I think I just gotta drive it to the mechanics, or maybe drive it to my friend's house. So I think that's a good idea. Drive it to my other friend's house, leave it there. So I start driving it again, right? And again, no license, no insurance, nothing, man. I start driving and I get into this intersection, which is on Dearborn, there's a Goodwill, you know, right by the I-5 overpass. And I'm underneath the overpass where there's an off-ramp, you know, cars coming this way and that way. It's about midnight and this car just dies, stalls out on this road. And I'm just trying to get it to go, cranking it, trying to get it to go, you know, just praying like, oh my God, please don't let a cop come right now. Please don't let a cop come right now. I'm starting to sweat. I'm just thinking, oh man, oh man. Eventually, you know, somehow it gets up the muster to go. It starts moving, thank God, right? Start going down Rainier Avenue. Again, I'm going like 20 miles an hour, you know, so sketchy. And eventually, you know, it dies again on me, stalls out, and I have to like push it off to the side of the road. And this lady who looked like she was having a worse time than me actually offered to help me push my car. And I, angrily, I said, no, no, I don't need your damn help. And I felt really bad about that, you know. But she was sweet enough to walk away, and I'm thinking, damn, you know, not only am I having a hard time in my life, but now I'm going and projecting all this negativity out onto other people who don't need it. Whose lives are probably way worse than mine right now, at least, you know. And eventually I push it into this, what was it, U-Haul parking lot or something like that, I don't know. You know, and I get there stuck for a little while, and I don't know what I did. Probably nothing, probably just started to give it going again. Eventually, it gets going again. Drive it up this hill, it's just stalling out on the hill, I'm almost to my friend's house, and it dies. And it dies, and it's like, the way that I tried turning it off, I didn't get to turn off all the way, so I'm like, turned off under this like person's driving, like their parking lot or whatever, their driveway. So I'm like half in their driveway and half in the street. I'm trying to like push it off into the like the, you know, side of the road even more so it's out of the way. It's not going anywhere. This thing's stuck, right? A week goes by. I'm going there every day. It's springtime now. It's starting to be summer. It's getting hot, you know. I'm out there. I'm trying to work on this car. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what can I do? What can I do? How can I clean the fuel system or anything like that? How do I, you know? And nothing works. I'm thinking, damn it, man, damn it. You know, all this time, you know, $5,000 in buying the car, probably $1,000 at least, $2,000 into trying to fix up the thing. And it's just sitting there. It's a horrible reminder of what, you know, not making wise decisions, not planning things out. What was it? She actually wanted me to buy the car before Mercury went into retrograde, right? Because you're not supposed to start new adventures or buy in new things when Mercury goes into retrograde. Okay. So I buy the car before Mercury goes into retrograde. Somehow it still, you know, still dies on me. Okay. You know, but so eventually I have to suck it up. I pay for the tow truck to take it over to the mechanics, and the mechanics tell me, yeah, you got your cylinders are shot. Your engine's blown. It's done. Nothing you can do. You can try to fix it yourself, but you're probably not going to be able to do it. You might be able to find an engine, but it's going to cost you, yeah, at least, you know, $1,800, and then on top of the work and everything. And, you know, eventually it's sitting at the mechanics for a couple of days, you know, and I'm just trying to dwell on, what am I going to do? How can I recoup my losses? Nothing I can do. Try to kind of cut it loose, you know? And when I did that, and I told the mechanics, you know, I didn't even say, I'll sell it to you and you can, you know, whatever. Just, you know what? Just take it. Just take the car. I don't want to deal with it anymore. Don't want that stress in my life. Don't want that reminder in my life. And I felt free that moment. I felt really free because I had gotten rid of that stress. But at the same time, I want to say that I'd gotten over the sort of baggage of this relationship, but I didn't. Don't know if you could ever be free of something like that. Maybe. You can learn from it and grow from it, you know? But there was a moment, I remember, when I got rid of that car, just washed my hands of it. I did feel a sense of freedom. But it wasn't the same freedom. Not the same that I felt when I first got the car. Because here I was thinking, I'm being responsible. I'm moving on with my life. Being responsible, right? Yeah, it's a joke at this point. She's, you know, and so I get rid of it, and I call the girl because she had helped me buy it. You know, she gave me some money for it, and I tried telling her, "You want it?" You know, she says, "No, keep it." I said, "I don't want to keep it." So when I'd gotten rid of it, I remember a distinct moment. I was sitting in my apartment or my house with my my roommate. And they say to me, of course, you know, it's a metaphor, all these things you can learn from it. But there was a distinct moment where I thought to myself, an honest truth, that I messed up. I tried blaming her, tried saying, "Oh, you and your Mercury in retrograde, this is your fault, all that." No, no, no. It was my fault. It was my decision. And I think that was probably the most, that was the freeing moment when I'd taken responsibility for a stupid decision, for all this irresponsible action that I thought was helping me, but it really wasn't, you know. And, yeah. I guess that's it. That's it for that car. That's it for that car. There's another one. Got it now. Much better decision, much wiser. So it's interesting, you know, baggage, freedom, all these things. I don't know what the moral is, but I can say that if you buy a car, don't buy a Mercedes. Is that okay? Is that okay?